Sie hören SBS German.
Hello and welcome to our podcast Abenteuer Lesen, or in English, Reading Adventure. Normally it's in German, today as an exception in English, because we're talking to an American bestseller author. His name is Choco Willink. In the studio is Eva Maurer. Hello, Eva.
Hello, Adrian.
Yeah, my name is Adrian Plitzko. Now, this is really unusual for us to do it in English because, as I said before, it's normally in German. So we're not quite familiar with the format, how we do it, what we do it, but we do the best we can. All right?
Always.
Eva, you met Choco Willink in Sydney. How did this happen?
I knew Choco Willink before from a leadership conference in New York, where I met him the first time. And they decided to do the first of these type of leadership conferences outside of America in Sydney. So it was a huge event and I was lucky to be able to go there. And he was willing to talk to me about his kids' books.
So he normally writes books for adults, for, yep, for, you know, about leadership, mm-hmm, but he did write four books for kids.
Yeah. So far. So there are more coming, yeah, but at the moment there are four books. So one series is the Way of the Warrior Kids series. From Wimpy to Warrior, the Navy SEAL way. And that's a series of three books at the moment, but every year or every half year more are coming. And the other book we talk about in the interview is Mikey and the Dragons. That's more towards a little bit younger kids. So it was really exciting for me and a huge opportunity to talk with him about his books, because it's not every day you meet a bestseller author. And what is really fascinating, or was fascinating for me, is that normally it's, and you know that, it's really hard to get fathers into the studio, for example, and to talk about how they read with their kids. We tried to get fathers on our show who are blogging to talk about kids' books and how they read with their kids, and we were not really successful with it. But with Choco Willink and his kids' books, it's really on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, you name it, Twitter, you see thousands of photos with fathers reading to their kids and really being proud and presenting the books to their kids. And that was really, really fantastic to see this enthusiasm with fathers. So my first question was how Choco Willink feels about being an author and the father, about the impact he has on fathers reading to their kids.
It's definitely one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my life, is to see kids reading and with their fathers, with their moms, little girls, little boys. And what's really cool that I should do a better job of sharing is I get letters, handwritten letters from kids all over the world who write me to tell me that they just did their first pull-up, or they just did 10 pull-ups for the first time, or they got an A plus on their math test, or they started training jiu-jitsu, or whatever thing they are facing, they're facing it. And so that to me is definitely one of the most rewarding things that I've had happen in my life. And I look forward to opening those letters every time I get them.
We tried a lot of times to get fathers on our podcast. We're talking lots about books and reading to kids. And it's really, really difficult to get fathers or men who are bloggers on the podcast to talk about reading, how they read to their kids. So what appeals to the fathers to really get after your books and like show photos, donating them to libraries, to the schools, and reading, really reading with their kids? What do you think appeals to them?
This book, I mean, when I wrote The Way of the Warrior Kid, as soon as I got done writing it, I realized that this was the book that I wish I would have had when I was 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 years old. That's a book that really does it puts down some basic information for human beings that we all strive for. And certainly it's goals and a code that I strive to live by. And I think what happens these days, and why I think it's very beneficial for fathers to read these books to their kids or with their kids is because, let's face it, a lot of times kids have a hard time listening to their dads. There's a natural rebellion, that rebellious streak that goes through every kid. It went through me when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I was a rebellious kid. But what your parents are trying to teach you are actually good things that are going to be helpful for you in your life as a kid. And so what I think is very beneficial about the book is it's the same lessons that you as a parent want your kids to learn, but they don't have to come from you, and they don't have to overcome the hurdle of this information coming from the parent, because all kids are going to have a natural rebellious streak. And so when you tell your kids something, they don't take it the same way as if they hear it from an outside source. So I think this character of Uncle Jake is a character that kids look up to and say, well, if Uncle Jake is saying it, it probably makes some sense, and I'm going to give it a try. So I think for kids, it provides them a very clear kind of code to think about and some very clear instructions of how to live a good life. And for parents, it helps parents convey those messages to their kids in a way that they don't have to put a bunch of effort behind, because they're there. So those are the reasons why I think the books have all done really well. And I think that's why we see those pictures all the time, because I think they really bring parents and kids together. They strengthen relationships and they make kids have better lives. Every one of these books, it's like, it seems so obvious, some of the lessons in them, but they're not always that obvious. And kids make mistakes and adults make mistakes. You know, I've told this story before, but I got a letter that I got from an individual, and I've written a bunch of books for kids and adults. And I got a letter from a guy who said, hey, I'm writing you this letter to say thank you. A while ago, I was having a hard time at work. I wasn't in good shape. I was eating horrible foods. I was drinking alcohol every night. My life wasn't going in a good direction. And then he said, and then I read your book. And when I read your book, he said, I just started waking up a little bit earlier in the morning. I started doing a little bit of exercise in the morning. Then I started eating a little bit more healthy. Then I started working a little bit harder at my job. Then I started paying attention at my job. Then I started really putting forth effort. Then I started working out a little bit harder. Then I started cleaning up my diet more. And he said, I forget what the number was, but he said, it's been 9 months. I've lost 25 pounds of excess body weight. I've gotten a promotion at my job. I'm healthy. My wife is happier. And I just wanted to say thank you for writing this book. And by the way, the book is called Way of the Warrior Kid. The book was Way of the Warrior Kid. So this was an adult. This guy was, I think he was 37 years old. And so these lessons inside these books aren't just for kids. And I've had many, many scores of parents tell me that, hey, I know that you tricked us and you wrote this book and you said it's a kid's book, but I know that I'm learning just as much from it as my kids. So I really appreciate it. And it's very humbling to have these, get this feedback from people about the book.
And for people who know your podcast and know you from different interviews, there are a lot of Easter eggs for the adults in your books as well. So if you're looking carefully, you have a lot of fun as an adult, as a parent, reading it with your kids.
There are layers to the books.
Absolutely.
There are hidden Easter eggs, as you call them. We call them layers exactly. Over here.
Let's jump into the books. So the first three novels are called Way of the Warrior Kid, and it's about Mark, who is growing up, having a little bit of a hard time during school. What happens in the first book?
Well, the first book, you know, young Mark is, like you said, he's having problems in school. Not just in school, but he's having problems with, he doesn't know how to swim. He can't do any pull-ups, so he's getting made fun of for those things. He doesn't know his times table, so he doesn't think he's smart. And then he's getting picked on by the school bully. So all those things are really hard for him. And he goes home the last day of school. After everything kind of comes to a head, he goes home from his last day of school. And he's crying and he's distraught. And then he remembers that his uncle is coming to stay with him for the summertime. And his uncle was in the SEAL teams, was a Navy SEAL. And so he kind of breaks down in front of his uncle and says, I'm having all these problems. And then his uncle says, well, listen, we can solve all these problems that you have, but you have to be willing to commit to hard work and discipline. But if you do, we can get you through these problems. And of course, Mark agrees. and he spends the summer trying to, well, he learns how to study, he learns how to eat properly, he learns how to work out, he learns jiu-jitsu, he learns how to swim, he overcomes his fears, and then he goes back to school, and, well, the rest of the story is there. But that's what that story is about. And all these things that I wrote about in the book, they're all based on real things that I've experienced or my own children have experienced. You know, it was my oldest daughter that came home from school one day, and she's a very smart girl. And she came home from school today one day saying, I'm stupid. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I don't know my times tables and the other kids know them. And I said, well, how much have you studied? And she gave me a puzzled look because she didn't even understand what studying was and that she should study. So I taught her how to make flashcards and taught her how to study those flashcards. And she did. And an hour later, she knew her times tables. But, well, it's a bad parenting for me to not have recognized that earlier. But those are the kind of lessons that I put inside of Way of the Warrior Kid, real pragmatic lessons that are in there. And the other thing I think that's the major theme of the book is his uncle explains to him what a warrior code is. And he ends up writing his own warrior kid code of ways of behaving that he's going to always aspire to. And I think that anybody that reads the Warrior Kid code knows that they're all really positive things and good things for all of us to aspire to, whether you're a kid or whether you're a 48-year-old man like me.
I think that's like a theme that goes through all the books, having the discipline to persist with something or to overcome fear, to focus on your goals. And in this case, at some stage, Mark wants to really fight against the bully, and Uncle Jake explains that's maybe not a good idea. So how did you talk with your kids about, you know, aggression and overcoming fear?
Well, overcoming fear is exactly as it's portrayed in the book. The overcoming fear story of the water was actually my middle daughter who wanted to be in plays, in musical plays, you know, on stage. But she was afraid. She was afraid to sing in front of people. So what I did was I said, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to sing in your room. I'm going to shut the door, but you go in your room and sing. And once she got comfortable doing that, a couple days went by and I kept having her sing in a room alone. And then one day I said, okay, I'm going to open the door now and you sing. And she realized there was nothing to be scared of. She could do it. So she would sing with the door open. Then I said, I'm going to stand in the hallway and listen to you sing. And she realized it wasn't scary and she could still do it. And then one day I said, I'm going to stand in the, you know, a couple days later, I said, I'm going to stand in the doorway now and just listen to you sing. And she was able to do it. And then I said, hey, Mom's going to watch you too. And so then we both stood in the doorway and then we stood in the room and watched her and then sat on the bed and watched her. And then eventually said, oh, your brother and sister are going to come in here and they're going to watch you too. And then we're going to have some neighbors over. And we just slowly got her to overcome the fear that she had of getting up and singing in front of an audience. And it worked. And by the way, that's actually a psychological method of treatment. It's called exposure therapy. And I didn't know that at the time, but I used it. And so that's a great way to overcome fear. And in the first Warrior Kid book, he's overcoming fear of the water by doing the same exact thing, just slowly going deeper and deeper in the water and getting more and more comfortable in it until he can finally jump off the bridge and swim around. So that is definitely what, you know, the way that I think that you need to overcome fear is by standing up and facing your fear. And as far as aggression and bullying goes, well, the best way to avoid fighting and aggression is actually to be capable. So that's why that's why young Mark learns jiu-jitsu, because when you're capable of fighting, guess what? People don't want to fight you anymore. And then you don't have to fight because you're capable of fighting and people don't attack you. Now, clearly, if someone does physically try and hurt you, you have to defend yourself. And if you train properly, you do know how to defend yourself. But what you find most of the time is when someone is capable and they understand how to defend themselves, they don't normally have to fight. And that's, you know, what we see throughout the books.
And that's something a lot of parents I talk to are first a little bit concerned, because Way of the Warrior Kid, I don't want my kid to fight or be aggressive or brutal until they understand it's more like the Karate Kid theme. You know, you have to learn a lot of restraint and control your emotions to apply your skills.
Yeah, and I always tell people, I've had people say to me, oh, I don't want to learn jiu-jitsu because I don't like to fight. And I actually say, if you don't like to fight and you don't want to fight, the best possible thing you could do is actually know how to fight. And that way you won't, the chances of you having to use it are a lot less than if somebody views you as being weak, views you of not being able to defend yourself, and they will, you know, a bully, that's what a bully is. A bully's not a strong person. A bully's not a person that necessarily knows how to fight. They just know how to identify weakness. And when they identify it, they'll attack it. And being bullied is a horrible thing for a kid. So get yourself to be capable. Train some jiu-jitsu, train some wrestling, train some boxing. Go learn that stuff. And the chances are you won't have to use it.
When we go to the next book, Mark's Mission, what I find really fascinating is how well you describe the development of a child, because he's now 1 year older. So the problems are getting a little bit bigger as well. He meets a different kind of bully who is more like a verbal bully, calling names. But what I find really, really great in the books is that you give a blueprint for parents how to talk about things. So Uncle Jake is like the role model for the parents, and he walks the talk. It's not like you said in another interview, it's not like I say, you do like I say, just because I say it like that, but you have to show kids that you mean it, that you do it yourself.
Yeah, and that's one of the key principles, not just of being a parent, but being a leader of any kind, is not just to bark orders at people and think they're going to respect you just because of your positional authority. What you want to do is actually have conversations with people, ask questions, and get them to see the point of view that you're presenting. And by the way, when you do that, you actually have to have a mind that's open enough to maybe absorb some of their point of view, and maybe they're correct about something. And maybe you need to alter your perspective a little bit. And so that's another big kind of underlying theme in Mark's mission, is understanding other people's perspectives and understanding why people behave a certain way. And instead of just judging them based on your own perspective, take a look at their world. And I think that was a powerful thing for a kid to learn, that look, people are going to be different from you. People are under different circumstances, and you as a human being need to consider what circumstances other people are in. And instead of going against them, maybe instead of fighting them or challenging them, maybe there's a possibility that you could actually help them and help yourself become a better person, make friends, and move the world forward instead of making it more divisive.
One other idea or concept in the second book is help can hurt. That's something I really, really like, because as a parent, you always want the best for your kids. You want to help them and make sure they are safe. And like, safety is a big, big word in Australia at the moment. Everything has to be safe. And actually, we are hurting our kids by making everything bulletproof and not allowing them to make mistakes and to get hurt sometimes. Instead of, like, as a parent, just making sure they are not, you know, killing themselves, but actually helping them to learn. Can you explain that to parents, how you meant it in your book?
Yeah, that's, I know it sounds really awful when you hear the phrase, if you're helping, you're hurting, because people can immediately jump to some kind of an extreme example. If your kid's playing in the road, well, you don't want to help them. Well, they're going to get killed. So that's not what I'm talking about. And the example that I often use is you're letting your kid tie their own shoes. Because every time that you tie your kid's shoes for them, they're actually not having the opportunity to develop their small motor skills and tie their own shoes, which is becoming responsible and capable in the world. The other example I use a lot is making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Hey, mom. Hey, dad. I'm hungry. Okay, go make a sandwich. Now, look. The kid is going to make a mess. The sandwich is going to look like it's going to look like a disaster. It might not even taste that good, but they're going to learn from it, and they're going to become more self-reliant, and they're going to realize that they have capabilities, and they're going to realize that they can be responsible for themselves. And every time you do something for your kid that they could do themselves, you're actually hurting them, because you're taking away their ability to be capable and competent in the world. So you have to let your kids brush up against the guardrails of failure. Look, your kids are going to get dinged up. They're going to get bruised. They're going to get some scrapes. That's okay. Are you going to let your kid risk a serious injury? No, of course not. But to not let them climb a tree because you're afraid they might scratch their arm, that's not good. They're going to scratch their arm. and they're going to learn. They're going to learn about what their limitations are. So these are the kind of things I think that I meant by that, and I still try and parent that way all the time. And it can be, you know, you're different parents. You know, my wife is definitely more on the helping side than I am. And when my wife goes on a trip somewhere, it's incredible how capable all of my children suddenly become. They do their own laundry. They make their own lunch. They make their own dinner. They do everything for themselves because I won't do any of it for them. And it takes about 2 days before they say, "When's mom coming home?" But the reality is, when she's gone, they learn about life, they learn about the world, and they realize that they're capable. And when my wife comes home from a trip, they're a lot more helpful because they realize they can do things for themselves. So definitely, I'm not saying you let your kids play in traffic, but you definitely need to let your kids go out and become capable.
And I think it's not only becoming capable, but also to be very social, because if you have kids who are polite, who take responsibilities, who can do their own lunchbox, for example, they are more likely to be invited to others for a sleepover or for a party, and they get to have more fun.
Yeah, the interacting with other kids and what these other things, and I think you're kind of brushing around the subject of when you make your own lunch, it increases your confidence. When you tie your own shoes, it increases your confidence. The more confident you are, the more open you are to walk up and meet other people, the more social interactions you have, the more friends you're going to develop, the better life you're going to have. So it's one of those threads that ties through everything that we do.
We got to the third book. Now Mark can swim. He can do pull-ups. He's good in maths. So he's really, really a strong leader now in his class, and he's very proud of himself. Then something else happens. As usual, at the end of the school year, a new kid joins the class. And then disaster happens.
Well, yeah, and it's an interesting disaster that I don't think a lot of people expected. And that was a kid shows up that is better than him at math. He's better at him in trivia. He's better at him in running. He can do more pull-ups than Mark. He actually has been training jiu-jitsu longer than Mark. And on top of all that, he's actually a very nice kid. And so what you end up with is sort of a classic example of the ego getting involved. And Mark, instead of befriending this kid, instead of looking at him as someone that would be a good training partner or someone that would be good to study from and or study with and learn from, he looks at him, he's jealous, and he sees him as a threat, and he does his best to kind of undermine him and form an antagonistic relationship with him. And that's what he kind of starts out doing until Uncle Jake kind of teaches him what his ego is and how much his ego is going to have a negative impact on, or how much your ego can have a negative impact on your life. Because ego is not all bad. And if you don't have an ego, I mean, ego is what drives us to want to win. It drives us to want to do well. It drives us to have pride in the work that we do. So you have to have some level of ego in your life. But if your ego gets to a point where you look at someone that's outperforming you and you want to cut them down, that's going to end up hurting you in the long run. So Mark is lucky enough to learn about ego at a fairly young age and see where these feelings that he's having are coming from.
He's not only confronted with his ego and yeah, sort of getting complacent with his successes, but also to really push him out of his comfort zone, because Uncle Jake is relentless in setting the expectations higher. What is that about? Why is it important?
Well, it's important because as human beings, as people, there are things that you're going to be good at. There's things that you're going to do well. There's things that you're going to be comfortable with. And if you stay in that world of things that you're comfortable with, well, first of all, your world is going to be limited. And second of all, you won't learn how to expand your horizons. So you have to learn how to push through that comfort zone of, hey, I'm comfortable with this, I don't need to push any harder, and really get to a point where you push yourself hard. Because if you want to achieve your maximum capabilities in life, then you have to push yourself hard. And that's really a word that, you know, sometimes people would use the term success, but success can mean so many different things. But just if you think about it in terms of capabilities, what capabilities do you have? What capabilities can you develop? How good of a person can you be? How good of a runner can you be? How good at jiu-jitsu can you be? How good in schoolwork can you be? If you really want to push that and really figure out how capable you can really be, you have to be able to push yourself hard and push yourself out of your own comfort zone.
And also to be honest with yourself, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something that we can do. We can debate with ourselves. We can lie with to ourselves. We can rationalize things that don't make sense to ourselves, but we can make them make sense. You know, we can make an excuse for anything. We're smart. Human beings are smart. That's one of our downfalls. We're so smart that we can figure out an excuse for anything. So we have to be honest with ourselves and see how hard we can really push.
And I think it's a little bit against the mainstream at the moment. I think with a lot of certificate culture. I don't know how it is in the States, but here in Australia, often you get a certificate for turning up to school. That's the way it is, you know, early bird awards. So that philosophy of pushing yourself out of the comfort zone is against that mainstream thinking.
Yeah, and it's also, well, the mainstream thinking that you're talking about isn't real. It's not the way the world actually works. The world actually works that if you work harder, it's not guaranteed, but the harder you work, the more benefits you'll get. You don't get rewarded just for showing up. You have to actually apply yourself and do your best. And if you apply yourself and you do your best and you do that all the time, you will end up with a better life than if you don't. That much I can promise you. That's a guarantee. Look, you may not achieve everything you've ever wanted to achieve because maybe you have some personal limitations, and we all have limitations. But if you want to reach your maximum capability, you won't do it just for showing up. You got to learn to work hard.
And it's also, I think, often like a lying to our kids. I feel it as a lie, because if you don't push, if you don't work hard, if you're not honest with yourself, as you said, you will not achieve. And we can't expect them to be capable at 18 if we don't tell them how to do that and guide them through becoming capable human beings.
Well, yeah, there's always the idea that gets floated around, which is you can do whatever you want. You can become whatever you want. And there's going to be limitations to that. But the question is how, you know, of the potential that I have, how much of it can I actually reach? And this is the thing. Human beings, 99% of the time, are capable of achieving infinitely more than what they do. So you might not be able to achieve anything, but I can guarantee you can achieve a lot more than you think you can. So, but it only comes through hard work, and it comes through discipline, and it comes through applying yourself. And if you watch people that are, you know, you might think, well, I want to be good at, you know, pick any sport, pick tennis. If you want to be a good tennis player, if you want to be an exceptional tennis player, people that are champion tennis players, they play tennis for 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours every single day. That's what it takes to become a champion in a sport. Not, hey, I play tennis twice a week for an hour. Hey, you can be good. You can have fun. You can enjoy it. That's fine. But if you actually want to become a champion, it's going to take a lot more effort. And that applies in anything that we do, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, whether it's cricket, whether it's soccer, whether it's surfing, whether it's jiu-jitsu. If you really want to apply yourself, it takes a lot of work. And it's the same thing with schooling. If you want to get into the best colleges, you have to study really hard. You have to study 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours every single day in order to get to the level that you want to get to. And it's the same thing when you reach the business world. Hey, the business world is run by people that work insane amount of hours to get their job done, to move forward in their business, to move their business forward. That's what they do. So what does that all boil down to? It boils down to hard work. And if you really want to achieve your maximum capability, you're going to have to work hard.
It's time for a kid's question.
Awesome.
That fits nicely in here. I love getting up early and training with my dad, but I get tired in the afternoon and find it difficult to concentrate. How can I get better at this?
One of the first things that I talk about when people talk about feeling tired is you need to look at what you're eating. Because if you get up early and you work out and you feel good when you get done with that, and then you go and eat some food with a bunch of sugar in it, that's probably, you know, at lunchtime you have some ice cream and some cake or some cookies or something like that, a bunch of potato chips. What that does to your body is it's going to absolutely make you feel tired. So the first thing that I always look at is okay, what is your diet like? What are you eating? And are you eating good, healthy foods? So that's the first thing to look at. The second thing is, what time are you going to bed at night? Because a lot of times, especially in this modern age, we can watch these little TV screens or little phone screens or little computer screens, and we can stay up. Even though our body's tired, we keep our mind active by staring at these little screens, and they really take control of your mind and make you stay awake a lot longer than you should. That's one of the reasons, you know, you asked about reading. One of the things that I love about reading is it makes you, first of all, it makes you smarter. So the number one way to get smarter as a human being is to read. Read as much as you can. The other thing is it's a different kind of stimulation for your brain. It's a kind of stimulation that your brain is actively kind of working. And so as you read, you don't get excited. Your brain gets a little bit tired. And for me, if I want to fall asleep at night, I would get a book out and read it. So that's the two things that I would say. If you're having trouble in the afternoon, like, first of all, check out your food. Make sure you're eating a good, clean diet without a bunch of sugar in it. And then also make sure that you're going to bed early enough and you're not staying up extra late because you're watching, little things or you're playing games on your computer or things like that. And those are the two things I would focus on first.
After the three novels, you hadn't had enough, and you wrote a fourth book. That's one of my favorite ones, Mikey and the Dragons. And little Mikey has lots of problems. He is afraid of pretty much everything. Bugs, monsters, under the bed, spiders, snakes.
He's scared of everything, basically.
You name it. Poor bugger. You know, I'm a mom. I'm a teacher, but I'm also a cognitive behavior therapist. So anxiety and fear is like our bread and butter. And I find it really interesting that you as a non-therapist picked up on a really, really important part of anxiety, the isolation. That if you are fearful, if you have anxiety, that you are isolating yourself, that you're not walking outside, not playing, not enjoying your life. I found it really interesting that you picked up on that and you show it in your book. You know, little Mikey's is alone most of the time.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, and one of the reasons that I started writing kids' books in the first place is because, you know, at the time when my kids were growing up, when my kids were younger, I was in the military, and as I would look at the problems that I were looking at, that I looked at on a daily basis, were very substantial problems. They were problems like war and life and death and, I mean, these are huge, substantial, consequential problems that I looked at every single day. And I remember at one point, I was talking to one of my kids, and they had some kind of a problem, some kind of an issue. And what I realized is that adults often look at kids' problems, and they go, oh, that doesn't matter. That problem is insignificant. It doesn't matter. You know, oh, you don't know your times tables? Oh, you'll learn them, whatever. Oh, you're getting picked on? Oh, you'll deal with it. Oh, you don't know how to swim? It doesn't matter. You just don't go to a pool. Whatever problems kids have, parents tend to look at them as they tend to minimize them. But what I realized in talking to my kids growing up was my kids, I would see in their eyes and I recognized, oh, I need to check their perspective. From their perspective, it's their entire world. It's their entire world. Their entire world is what's their world is. It's their school. It's their classmates. It's their not being able to do any pull-ups. That's a huge deal when you're a kid. That's the whole, every kid in the class can do a pull-up and I can't. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. These problems that seem so insignificant when you're an adult are actually, it's their entire world. And that's kind of with Mikey and the Dragons. You know, it's like you just said, when someone's scared, well, then they become isolated because they don't want to go out, they don't want to interact, and they can't do certain things because they're scared. And so fear, really, to me, if you look at what it's like as a young human being experiencing the world, so much of the emotion that you feel is the feeling of fear. There's people that are bigger than you. There's monsters. There's the world. I mean, the world is a scary place. And so to me, this idea of a kid being scared is not a unique idea at all. To me, it's every kid. There's no kids that are out there that don't have fear. And so what I also realized is that there are pragmatic, real things that you can do as a human being to face your fears and overcome your fears. And that's the lessons that I wanted. Those are the lessons that I wanted to get across in Mikey and the Dragons. How you overcome fear, because we all have fear. And when you're young, you have a lot of it.
And Mikey is lucky because he finds a book written by Sir Jake. I loved a lot about that. And Sir Jake is a knight of the sea, the air, and the land. So everything is covered. What happens in the book Mikey finds?
So in the book that Mikey finds, and it, you know, once again, it's another layer there, is that this kid, Mikey, is able to find solutions or find experience and find understanding of the world through reading, which is another important message to convey, because the more you read, yeah, the smarter you get, but you also get to experience things without actually having to experience them. So reading is so important, and I wanted to convey that message. How do you overcome fear? It's interesting. This kid is able to learn to overcome fear by reading a book. So the book that he finds is about a kingdom. And in this kingdom, the king has died. And now inside this kingdom, there is no one there that is going to stand up and face the dragons. And the dragons live over the hill in the dragon's cave. In the dragon cave, and all the townspeople and people in the kingdom are horrified of these dragons. And it was always the king that would go out, walk over the hill to the dragon cave and fight the dragons. And now he's dead. He's gone. And now there's no one to fight the dragons. The guards don't want to do it. The knights don't even want to do it. And so all eyes are on the king's son, the prince. But the prince is just a little kid. He's only 7 years old, and he's scared. Because he's just a kid. How is he going to stand up and face these dragons? But he feels the pressure and feels like he needs to explore how he's going to handle this. So he goes to his father's room and he opens up his father's war chest. And inside the war chest, he finds a shield and he finds the sword and he picks up the shield and he picks up the sword. They're both like heavy for him and he can barely lift them. And now he's even more scared. He doesn't know how he can fight a dragon if he can barely lift up the shield and sword. And then he sees at the bottom of the chest, there's a note. And he picks up the note and it's from his father, the king. And his father, the king, explains the things that he has to do to stand up and fight the dragons. And the main component of what he says is that the fear that you're feeling is mostly in your head. And so with that, he summons up his courage and he goes and faces the dragons. And he realizes that just like his father had told him, there wasn't as much to be afraid of with these dragons as he had built up in his head.
I'll ask you in a second, maybe if you could read us something from the letter of the king.
Okay.
But I found interesting that the king never taught his people the solution. We don't want to spoil it. We don't tell what the solution is or what the ending of the story is. But I found it interesting he never taught his people how to overcome the fear.
Yeah. And if you recognize in the end of the book, the prince actually tries to explain to the people that there's nothing to be afraid of. And they don't listen to him because they have it built up in their heads and that's the way they're kind of stuck. And so that's the way the world is in many ways. And if you're one of those people that can stand up and say, okay, I'm going to face these things, even when people see you do it, sometimes it still is hard for others to overcome. So it is interesting. And, you know, who knows, maybe there'll be a follow-on story where maybe some of these lessons get spread throughout the village. So, this is the letter that the king wrote to the prince that the prince found in the bottom of the war chest. And it goes like this. To my son. If you are reading this now, it means I am gone. and you are the one that must carry on. Our kingdom is now what you must save, and to do that, you have to be brave. I know that you think you don't know what to do, but remember that I was once a little boy too. I was also small and had fear in my heart, and I didn't even know where to start. I couldn't imagine going over the hill to face the dragons that wanted to kill. But don't worry, son, you will be just fine if you can keep these things in your mind. The dragons, they aren't really that big at all. It's only in our minds that we make them so tall. Inside our brains, things always get overblown, especially things that are completely unknown. But when fear settles in and gets a hold of you, here are some things that you simply must do. Stand up straight and hold your head high. And look your fears right in the eye. Don't look away and don't try and hide. Know that you have great strength deep inside. When you stand up and go into the fray, you will feel your fears start to go away. And though there will be horror you feel, the things you are scared of are not a big deal. This is not to say you won't feel a scare. Fear is a feeling that all of us share. Fear is normal for every person on earth, but this is where a hero proves his worth. A coward runs away when danger is near, but a hero will face the thing that they fear. So that is what you must do, my son. Face the dragons and do not run. And I promise when you meet them, you will see that you are just as strong as me. The dragons that seem so mighty and mean are not ever as bad as they might seem. And most of the things that fill you with dread are usually just made up in your head. Your father, the king. And that is the letter.
Chuka Willing, what is next?
Well, I've got another adult book coming out, which is called Leadership Strategy and Tactics. And it really gets granular on the mechanics of leadership. And then, of course, I'm always working on other books. I've got a novel, an adult novel that I'm working on. And that should be coming out hopefully in January of 2021. And I am working on two other kids' books with a third one that's being crafted as well in my brain.
So we will see Mark in eighth grade?
I think we'll see Mark in eighth grade.
Yeah. And there's a new coloring in book.
Yes.
Just brand new.
Yep.
As well.
Yep. And the Warrior Kid coloring book is actually not just a coloring book. It tells the story of the first Warrior Kid book in a little bit of a simpler form so that younger kids can understand it and read it and start to live the Warrior Code at an even younger age.
Where can people get in contact with you on social media?
I'm at Jocko Willink. It's JOCKOWILLINK. And I'm on the regular social media channels. And by that, I mean Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Jocko Willink, it was a joy to have you on our radio show, Abenteuer Lesen. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
That was Jocko Willink, the American bestseller author, talking to you, Eva Mura, in Sydney last year. What a talk that was. Quite interesting, and an interesting man as well. And he's got four kids' books published out there already, besides his many, many other books for the adult reader. That was our podcast, Abenteuer Lesen, or Reading Adventure. That was an interesting adventure with Jocko Willink and you, Eva Mura. I'm Adrian Plitzkau. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Lust auf weitere Interviews und Geschichten? Uns gibt's auf allen großen Podcast-Plattformen wie Apple, Google und Spotify.